This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and the one in Malbus on 181 with the state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Lori. How are you doing?
Great for a Monday, and I know you have an urgent appeal for our listeners, as I got your email last night.
That's correct. Actually, you jumped the gun on me,
okay,
but I'll get
right to it. You'll
get
to it this morning. We'll just have to wait
and
see.
No, but I mean, what Lori referenced here was that I sent an action alert out to the Common Sense Campaign and the Alabama Coalition of Conservatives, and ask them to call Governor Ivey and write to her and demand that we have, no ifs, ands, or buts, a resolution against critical race theory. And I think that that's exactly what we think is going to happen tomorrow. So since I'm on that right now, then let's go ahead and just pick up on that. The bottom line is that for the last month or so, the conservative groups in this state have been working against the critical race theory. We've also been working against Common Core, which I've told you all about, so I'm not going to get into that. But on June 26th, a group of us met in Birmingham, linked to the Republican Women of Shelby County. And here again, these Republican women groups and it's called the Alabama Federation of Republican Women, have really been on the cutting edge of what we've been trying to do in getting the conservative voices out there and being heard and fighting hard on our issues. So at any rate, what we did on the 26th of June in Birmingham was to develop a biracial plan by which these teams of ours would be going to various county boards of education and speaking against critical race theory, and also providing those boards with a resolution that they could adopt after due diligence that would prevent any of their schools from using critical race theory. So that's what we've been doing. Okay, and so here we are now on the 10th or 11th. No, today's the 12th, isn't it? Yes, 12th. Today's the 12th of July. Tomorrow, we have a State Board of Education meeting, and that meeting is supposed to be at the meeting during their work session after their first meeting. The work session is going to discuss critical race theory. And so as a lead in to that, yesterday, I basically sent out more requests, action alerts, for people to get in touch with the governor. And again, like I said earlier, no ifs, ands, or buts. We want a CRT resolution. So I did get a response from Jackie Ziegler, who is our Board of Education representative. And Jackie said that the governor will be making an opening statement about it during the work session. So I think, you know, as a lesson here, grassroots, you know, do make a difference, number one. Number two, I would definitely listen in on this. You can dial it up on the Alabama State Department of Education website. They have it's like a YouTube thing. It's a live stream. Mm-hmm. So we can listen in and see what happens. I certainly plan on doing that, because here's the danger, and I've pointed this out in some of my other writings to people in the Action Alert. You've got a couple of so-called Republicans on this Board of Education who defected on the question of Common Core in the 2019 Mass Standards. Eagle Forum gave every one of those board members a detailed study that showed the new math standards were nothing more than our good friend Common Core. These Republicans went ahead and voted for the 2019 math standards. An outrage, okay? An absolute outrage. They ran against Common Core. So my point was, if they defected on Common Core, are we so sure that these same people who are still there are not going to defect on critical race theory. I'm hoping they don't. But if they do, there is just no way. Both of these board members, one is Tracy West and one is Cynthia McCarty, they're both eligible for re-election or up for re-election. And I met on Saturday at Enterprise in Alabama. We, George Williams and Judd Blakely and I, went to give a talk on CRT at the Coffee County Republican group. And I met an individual who is going to be running against Tracy West. No matter what Tracy does on voting against Common Core, I mean, critical race theory or not, she's going to be challenged, and I promise you, we are going to work hard to get Ms. Chivas that position that Betty Peters used to have. So that's where we are with critical race theory in the state. We are in the process of getting these teams to various local boards. Tomorrow night, we go to Baldwin County. George Williams and I have already been there one time about 3 weeks ago to speak against CRT. And then on July 26th, a group of us will be going to the Mobile Board of Education to present them with a resolution, and we'll see where all this goes. But we are not going to sit by and watch CRT be put into our schools. It's poison, it's destructive, and it's all based on communist stuff that we do not accept. And the Black Lives Matter and Antifa people are all for it. They're all behind it. And all it will do is just destroy this country. And that's what the communists have wanted to do forever and ever. And we say absolutely not. Okay. So since Laurie got me involved with that a little bit early, I do want to make sure that we understand that, you know, these issues do need action. So if you'll go to the Common Sense Campaign website, you'll see a way to get in touch with the governor and give that call to her, because I do think that, you know, it's important. It's critical that we save this generation of children from the poisonous, you know, critical race theory, which is going to pit black against white and white against black. It makes sense only if you want to destroy the country, and we are not going to let it happen. Here's another issue that's important to us down here. It looks like Biden is going to try to send federal people to your home to ask you whether or not you've been vaccinated. Now, what they do with that information, who knows? But the fact of the matter is, you don't have to answer a thing. You can actually tell them to get off your property. And I will be sending something out that we got from Eagle Forum, which was really a nice little how to handle these kinds of, you know, offensive visits from people who have no business asking you anything about whether or not you want to get or you've been vaccinated or not. That's your private right, and we're going to make sure that we follow up on that. So please just be wary of, you know, feds coming asking for questions. If you don't want to answer them, say politely, adios, not talking to you today, please leave, okay? Let me talk about the border crisis, okay? I know that we've talked about this border crisis just about every week because the border crisis is ongoing. And guess what? It is not getting any better. In fact, as a matter of fact, the June figures for border apprehensions, 174,512, okay? But listen to this stat. 39,253 were gotaways, meaning that they never got those people under control. Now, it's bad enough that we've got 174,000 apprehended, because all Biden and them is doing is packing them up, putting them on buses, sending them into the interior of the country, so that little towns and villages are going to have to deal with these folks, put them in schools, give them medical care, deal with all sorts of issues, not least of which is that there are criminal elements who are in these groups. Now, we've already seen the statistics in terms of how many Americans have been killed as a result of, you know, murders, car accidents because these illegal immigrants are driving DUI, the rapes that are there, the burglaries. How much more do we have to take of this? Well, that's a good question, because it looks like unless our elected officials, and again, I recognize the Republicans are in the minority, they can't do too much. But it seems to me that what they could do is to go ahead and put some sort of a bill out there, and then if they get 218 votes, then by the rules of Congress, that bill has to be voted on. And we keep hearing how some of these Democrats, you know, they got elected in areas that were supportive of Trump. Why not try to put some pressure on these people and see if they can't do something along the lines of, you know, actually living up to the laws that are on the books concerning the border? I mean, how hard is this? Seems to me that if Congress can't do that, then we've already seen some of these red state attorney generals going after Biden on his executive orders and other things like that. Maybe now is the time for these attorney generals to work towards, you know, taking Biden to court on breaking immigration law. I mean, the last time I looked, the wall was already being funded by Congress. Why does Biden have the right to just stop it? Immigration laws about crossings, all the rest of these things are part and parcel of a legal framework. And we can argue that it's flawed and all like that, but there's a framework. Why not force them to live by the law? You know, I've made this point to some of our representatives about how Congress has to work closer with our elected officials, such as our attorney generals, who actually have the ability to go on offense against Biden's policies. It makes no sense. And I mean, the answer that I've been given on this is that, well, you know, we're Congress and that's the states and, you know, there's a wall of separation there, blah, blah, blah. I understand that completely. That's not the issue. The issue is the country is under attack by these radical left-wingers. And so why not try to work together to figure out how best to stop them? I mean, in some ways, it's happening regardless of a lack of coordination. But it sure would be nice if we had, you know, 100% of everybody just working as a team to stop all of this as we work towards getting Congress back in 2022. You know, take the Senate, take the House, and in 2024, get Trump back. Okay, that's a good plan. But you know what? It takes more than talk. There's got to be some working out of the details to where people are actually putting, you know, pen to paper, you know, voice to radio, TV, and doing something. So that's my point, and I'm sticking to it. I think there needs to be more done on it, okay? Now, here's a fun one. This question about Afghanistan. I've talked to you all about the war on terror before. I've mentioned all of these things in the context of Obama's failures especially. But it seems to me that what we're seeing right now with a debacle taking place in Afghanistan, even NBC News, which you know, probably was a little bit more sympathetic to Obama because Obama called Afghanistan the good war and Iraq was the bad war, okay? I understand that. So at any rate, Richard Engel is their reporter on the ground. And I guess it's just in yesterday's Meet the Press, he was giving his report. I know that we've seen some pictures in Bagram Air Base, the major base that's there right outside of Kabul. At midnight, I guess, couple of days ago, last week, you know, everybody left. Supposedly, according to other reports, the Afghanis were not even told about it. We just pulled the plug. Now, there are a couple of problems with this, okay, and I'll talk about them. But I also want to put this pull-the-plug approach into political context. And those of you who know me know very well where I'm going with this, okay? It's 1972. It's the Easter Offensive. The North Vietnamese have attacked South Korea. They have rolled the South Vietnamese back. Did I say South Korea? I think I did. Take that back, it's South Vietnam. The North Vietnamese launch a conventional military attack. This isn't the pajama guerrilla army. These are Soviet tanks, Soviet APCs, Soviet air defense missiles. This is a conventional attack. 1972. And what happens? The United States has a cadre of advisors who are ready to help the South Vietnamese. They had been there for a while, but they were integrated into the South Vietnamese forces. And so the combination of American air power and naval gunfire off the shore of Vietnam, we were able to throw back the North Vietnamese attack that's called the Easter Offensive. Not only did we do that, Nixon was able to stand by his ally. We didn't walk out on Saigon. He called the Soviets bluff over a summit meeting that Nixon was supposed to have with Brezhnev. And the Soviets did not blink. Nixon did not blink. What ended up happening is we rebombed above, you know, into North Vietnam that had been stopped by Johnson in an effort to bring about peace. So the point here is that, and you can go back and look at it for yourself, but the North Vietnamese lost a major battle. This was supposed to be their coup de grace. They were going to be able to take South Vietnam. They didn't. Run the reel up to 1974, August. Nixon resigns. By October of 74, you have a radical left-wing Congress, no different than what you see today. They come in, and by January of 75, they pass bills that defund the American military's ability to support the South Vietnamese army. Now, and this is happening today with the Afghanis. We trained them. They have a commando force which is still fighting, but those folks need American intelligence support. Not anymore. I mean, unless we can somehow figure out a way to do it long distance, which I suppose we can. But the intelligence apparatus that we had in Afghanistan was helpful to us as well as to our Afghan allies. My point here, defunding our allies in 75 led to the ultimate defeat in April of 75. If we go down the same road, the same thing is going to happen. Now, I would suggest to you, here again, the political context of it, it's the Democrats who did this in 75. And Obama did the same thing in 2011. Remember, Iraq was the bad war. Afghanistan was the good war. So he pulls the plug in 2011. What then happens? And I've been down this road with you all before. The fact of the matter is that ISIS grew out of the American withdrawal by Obama. And you know the rest of that story, okay? Don't have to repeat it. The only reason ISIS is gone today is because Trump came in and bombed the you know what out of them. Obama refused to do that. Again, I've mentioned this on the show before. The air sortie raid against ISIS was pathetic. Obama called ISIS, you know, the JV team. Just because they have a Lakers uniform doesn't make them Kobe Bryant. Okay? He said that in September of 2014. By the middle of the spring, by about April or May of 2015, ISIS had captured all of the western part of Iraq. Mosul, the largest city in the western part, had captured Syrian territory. Guess what they called it? The Caliphate. They had more territory than any terrorist group had ever put together. Bigger than Rhode Island, if I'm not mistaken. My point being, look at the political history of what the Democrats do in foreign policy. Okay? The Democrats pulled the plug on our allies in Vietnam. 250,000 had to flee. Those are the ones that had worked with the Americans. I have a good friend who was one of those people that made it out. He and his wife and three children at the time. Unbelievable. And here we are after Obama's 2011 idiocy of pulling out all of our troops out of Iraq. The next thing you know, Obama had to put them back in because of the ISIS threat. So here's Uncle Joe Biden, who was sitting there watching what happened in Vietnam, and then being the right-hand man of Obama in 2011. Interesting that Biden didn't even want to go after bin Laden and give credit to Obama for at least trying, and he was successful. But the point is that when it comes to these relationships and the necessity to stand by your allies, I mean, the Democrats do not have a good track record on this. And while it's true that I have disagreed with some of Trump's decisions on all of this, to Trump's credit, he did say he wanted to get out of Afghanistan, but he was going to do it only on the basis of conditions on the ground. Now, I fully expected that had he won in 2020, of course he didn't because of the whole steel business. Not the lie about the steel, okay? Let's be clear about this. No damn lie, okay? At any rate, his approach was different. And I do think that faced with these kinds of circumstances, those conditions on the ground would have forced Trump to stay in Afghanistan, just like he stayed in portions of Iraq and the eastern portions that had oil on it. It's going to be interesting to see what Biden does with that one. But my point here is that conditions have changed significantly. And those conditions do not bode well for the Afghan people, nor to American interests. So let's talk a little bit about those interests. You know, the fact is, we're still in the war on terror. Yes, ISIS and Al-Qaeda have been diminished. Yes, there have been less attacks. Yes, their leadership is under a lot of pressure because every time they pop up, we manage to kill them, as we've done with ISIS and we did with bin Laden. But the point here is that they're still operating in Afghanistan. Think about this. And think about 2001. What was it that brought us to Afghanistan to begin with? It was the fact that bin Laden had a safe harbor to plan the attacks on our soil. Now you say, okay, well, there's no bin Laden, so there's really no no one who's got the strategic, you know, approach to fighting a terrorist guerrilla war against the United States. Well, I mean, it's true that bin Laden's gone, but that doesn't mean that you don't have people who can do this. And the classic example of that was Soleimani from Iran. Now, true, Soleimani is gone, but so is bin Laden. Soleimani, in my view, was a strategic threat because he was able to put together these terrorist groups to work towards the interests of the Iranians. And the combination of Iran's ability to sell oil, to get money, to fund these terrorist groups, ended with Trump. Okay? Obama let all of this go on his watch. He funded it. He funded the Iranians by turning over $150 billion. This whole business of the nuke deal, which I've ranted and raved at for years on this show. God, it's hard to believe I've been on here for years, but it's true. The fact of the matter is, the whole Obama approach to Iran was flawed from the outset. His whole approach to Syria was flawed at the outset because he wanted to get that deal with the Iranians over the nukes at all costs. Excuse me. And so, when push comes to shove, after drawing a red line with the Syrian government, Assad, if you use weapons of mass destruction against your own people, that's the red line. Oops, they used it. Oops, oops. Obama did nothing except he reached out to the Soviets, to Putin, not the Soviets, sorry, to the Ruskies, and Putin was more than happy to be the broker of the deal between the Iranians and the Americanos, because that's what Obama wanted. And you see the result of that diplomacy, that failed diplomacy. The Russians control Assad. The Iranians are part and parcel of that. The Iranians put their own Quds Force people to fight there. And the Russians had their Air Force and some Special Forces people there too. Some of their Special Forces people, their mercenaries, attacked some Americans a few years ago, if you remember. And we destroyed them. My point here again is, look at the failures of the Obama-Biden foreign policy. And then look at Obama. Oh, gosh, I'll tell you, it's Monday. Look at Biden. Look at what he's doing, okay? Afghanistan, if it turns into another safe harbor for the terrorists, the Al-Qaedas, and all the rest of them, it seems to me that you have got to be aware of this. Now, I mentioned earlier that Richard Engel, the NBC reporter, was talking about Bagram Air Force Base, and he interviewed the commander of the Afghan commando group. You know, and the commando guy said, look, we're still fighting. We're going after them. We're doing everything we can, but we only have 30,000. Okay? So a lot hinges on what these 30,000 can do against 75,000 or so Taliban fighters. Engel's point, he didn't say this, but I'll make the point for him. Are we going to support these folks with the training, the materials that they need, the intelligence that they have to have without us there? How is this going to work, in other words, okay? So, as we, well, gosh, my goodness, this went fast.
Yes,
I'm already
does.
Up to 34 here. I've got a minute or two to wrap it up. So my point being here is that Engel says that Mullah Omar, who was the former head of Afghanistan before we kicked him out, basically one of his advisors said, look, we've learned a lesson about ISIS and Al-Qaeda. We're not going to let them be, you know, a safe harbor in Afghanistan. Look at what happened. We've learned a lesson. Right. We're going to take that one to the bank, okay? So what I'm suggesting to you here is that you have a major problem in developing. You've got the Iranians on one side of the Afghan border. You've got China to the north. You've got Pakistan to the east. And it's like, why in the world are we getting ourselves out of there when we need to be there to be able to monitor what's going on, to play a diplomatic role, you know, in this area, especially because Pakistan and India are at loggerheads over any number of issues. Pulling out of there does not make any sense whatsoever. And maybe these guys, all these smart folks that Biden has working for him, will come to that conclusion too. We shall see. Meanwhile, back here in our old United States, it seems to me that what we need to be doing is contending to the nth degree against what Biden is doing in all sectors, particularly along the lines of the border, particularly when it comes to critical race theory, and then doing what we can do here locally. And what we can do here locally is to get in touch with Governor Ivey and make sure that she doesn't make yet another mistake, because she just seems to make a whole lot of, you know, mistakes when it comes to being on the wrong side of conservative issues, which we will make her pay a price for that. But I'm hoping that she'll see the light here and go against critical race theory and put her foot down and end it in the schools. We need to make sure that happens, folks. And next week, I'll have more to report on it. But please go to the Common Sense Campaign website, get the information you need, and call Ivy and tell her no to Common Core, yes, but critical race theory. All right, guys. Miss Lori has given me an extra minute. Actually, she says two.
And a half.
I've only got one on mine, but nevertheless, we won't argue the whatever. Y'all have a great week. Hopefully the rain will subside a little bit. The mugginess too, but that ain't going to happen, so deal with it. Y'all take care. God bless. See you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. Dr. Lou Campagnosi is president of the Common Sense Campaign. You can hear this program Mondays at 10:05, and you can also listen to it later at WABF1480.com.